We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, hi.
Out Now is a film podcast, which is Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. However, every now and then we have these random bonus episodes where we talk about various things. Occasionally we do commentary tracks, and this is one of those commentary tracks. We are excited to do a commentary track for The Road Warrior, the second film in the Mad Max... Well, now it's a quadrilogy, I guess. And this is a pivotal action film in film history, I would say. And I'm very happy to discuss it with Abe, who I believe has seen it long ago and is going to be revisiting it for the first time in a while, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, but joining me, I have two many much more qualified people to also discuss The Road Warrior with. From the Naptown Nerd, currently running for office in Bartertown, it's Brandon Peters.
Who run Out Now Town?
And from the Nothing's On podcast, he's his own personal toe cutter, it's Jim Dietz.
I prefer to be referred to as the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir, Ayatollah.
How are both of you doing tonight?
Excellent, we're watching The Road Warrior.
Yeah, I have a full tank of gas for this one.
Good. It's a good thing to do. Yeah, we're here to talk about The Road Warrior. I mean, I guess we're on Audio Boom now, and we haven't done a commentary for Audio Boom yet.
Not yet.
Recorded on, going on to Audio Boom. So if that's it, for those that are new to commentary tracks that we do, basically, Brandon, Jim, Abe, and I, we're all in separate areas, but we all have The Road Warrior paused at a certain spot at the beginning of the film. In this case, it is about 21 seconds in on my clock here, but it's basically after whatever the Warner Brothers logo and after the Leonard Maltin introduction, which I'm sure all of you watched. There's the first part of the movie is a credit tag that says Kennedy Miller Presents. So we all have it paused right there. And eventually, after I finish up this intro, I'm going to count down from three, and on the sound of go, we're all going to press play, and we're just going to talk over the film. Obviously, we have the film muted or lowered at volume, so you know you can't hear it. You can just hear us talking about it, but that's what we're going to do. And if you want to watch the movie and listen to us talk about it, great. If you just want to listen to us talk about The Road Warrior, that's what we're going to be doing, and we're going to be nonstop talking about The Road Warrior, which should prove to be quite awesome. So,
Road Warrior.
Yes, thank you.
Nonstop.
And nonstop. And yeah, that's going to do it here. So that's what we're going to do, and I'm going to get this thing going. You guys ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Always. Absolutely.
I'm going to count down from three then, and on the sound of go, I'm going to press play. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. So, this is the second film in the Mad Max. It's weird to not say trilogy anymore, but this is the second film, the second Mad Max film.
But it's the first one many people see.
True.
Well, it was interesting when it came out here in the States. I saw it in the theater when it first was released back in 81, and it was just billed as The Road Warrior. It wasn't Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior, or Mad Max, The Road Warrior. It was just titled The Road Warrior. I mean, I actually have the movie poster that I saw when I was a kid, and it was just titled The Road Warrior, and it wasn't until a few years later that I ended up seeing Mad Max.
Now, when you saw the film I don't know if you remember this exactly, but when you saw the film for the first time, does it say Mad Max 2 at the top, or does it say The Road Warrior?
It just said The Road Warrior when I first saw it in theaters.
Was it this white credit type that over where Mad Max 2
No, it was more like, it was like a swoosh, kind of swooshed in, like whoosh, The Road Warrior. And it was a little different typeface than what is there, but yeah, it was never. I never remember it being marketed as a sequel when it first came out here, because I think Mad Max, you know, really wasn't that huge of a hit here in America.
Yeah, it was a huge hit in Australia. It's like one of the more successful independent films of all time. It's a very low budget film that's made like hundreds times of its budget, which is impressive to say the least. Obviously, because here we are with Mad Max Fury Road coming out this Friday, but yeah, do we have The Road Warrior, which is just The Road Warrior. Like, it doesn't try to present itself as a sequel. But the series, for the most part, each of these films, I would say, having seen Fury Road as well, each of these films really does stand on its own. There's various connections. Obviously, Mel Gibson is a huge one, and, you know, what Max is, and knowing about him helps. But you could watch any one of these films and be completely fine.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, you just... As if you're a fan of the series, it's fulfilling to watch it progress. But if you're just popping in for an adventure or just a Mad Max movie, you got your grounds covered as well. Well, I mean, it's
cool
really
for me
impressive
was,
how they stand alone.
Yeah, they do stand up on their own, and I thought it was really cool when I ended up watching Mad Max a few years later after watching the Road Warrior. I saw all the different like cues and clues of what was going to happen in the Road Warrior. You know, the rising of anarchy, the kind of, you know, the police losing control of the country, you know, the gangs running rampant over gasoline, that kind of thing.
Max getting madder.
Yes, Max hurting his leg and losing his partner, and where the car comes from, and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah, and like in Thunderdome and this one look more closely related, just maybe because of the atmosphere, but I mean they're completely different entities. I mean there's a chase at the end of Thunderdome, but its action scenes are kind of set on its own.
Yeah,
and it
that's
and it's got
the,
like
the kind of the world of Road Warrior and beyond really kind of is it's the most it's where it can, becomes post-apocalyptic. Like Mad Max, it's starting. Like it literally says like a few years from now. That's like the first thing you see on the screen when Mad Max begins. Here it's like at this point the world is just terrible.
In Mad Max you can still go out for ice cream.
Yeah.
In Road Warrior I wouldn't eat the ice cream.
I like this intro setup here where it's showing you Mad Max on top of like footage of like of oil and like the world blowing up and stuff. Like it's just like trying to mishmash it together. I always like these kind of 80s movies that have like these sequels with bigger budgets, and I'll get to exactly what I'm referring to in a second, where they have to find a way to recap what happened the first time around while not pretending, while not like focusing too much on the fact that it's a sequel. So Mad Max does it this way. Evil Dead 2, they just reshot the movie essentially for the first like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
love
see
that
like
shot
they
right there from the blower back.
Great shot.
Great frame shot.
Yeah, they could have Evil Dead 2'd this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they could have just kind of remade Mad Max, but
which wouldn't be that hard to, and I say this having rewatched Mad Max very recently, which I've seen plenty of times, but I mean, watching Mad Max recently, I always remember it a little differently, where I feel like it tends to be like long and not too much happens before it gets to like its final 20 minutes where he becomes crazy mad because his wife and child are killed. But that said, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the first Mad Max, and we can talk about that later as we talk about our thoughts on these films in general. But yeah, there really isn't too much that happens that wouldn't make it too hard to remake that movie in the first 10 minutes of this movie if you wanted to. Because you really just need to, if you want to make a movie about Mad Max, you just have to establish that here's a guy, used to be a good guy, family killed, and now he's an anti-hero, essentially.
But does he have a dog?
No.
The first one. There you go.
Something I always I remember, too, after the success of this movie, all the low-budget imitators that came out after, like, Warrior of the Lost World, Exterminators of the Year 5000. I mean, this bred, like, a whole subgenre of post-apocalyptic movies
Italy
after it
for
came
like,
out.
Yeah, Italy for, like, the next, like, year or two, that's all they made.
Yeah, yeah, because of the success.
They went from
movie.
Zombies to Mad Max ripoffs.
Let alone, right. I mean, yeah, it's inspired a lot of cheap imitators. In this movie, it's not exactly like this is a huge budget movie, but it set the, I mean, there's various depictions of like apocalyptic worlds that we had seen at this point, but the Road Warrior really set a precedence for what certain types of post-apocalyptic worlds can look like. And you see that today. You see that in video games, you see that in movies, you see that in TV shows, you see that everywhere.
I was going to say Fallout 3.
Fallout 3 is
very much
a huge one.
Yeah,
sure.
Got a lot from this. Here we go, Vernon Wells.
But even something like, I don't know, The Book of Eli. You can look at a lot of just movies in general. Just
the
kind
costuming,
of,
the set, yeah.
I mean, beyond Thunderdome. No, beyond seeing dystopian futures, something like Blade Runner, where you're in a, you know, a metropolitan area and seeing how the future shaped itself around that, you get a movie like this that's set out in the wastelands. And most movies, you can look at Road Warrior as the one that it very much inspired why it looks that way. I like the shot coming up here where the guy's going
to... I love
like,
how he's patting. I love how he pats the...
Nobody's
yeah,
gonna hear the screaming,
out.
And he looks, and this guy's like screaming in the background. Like, yeah. It's like, wait, pay attention to me! You owe me revenge.
The sequence of shots here. Watch this. There are a couple of effect shots, but it's mostly it's all Vernon Wells' facial expressions, mm-hmm. like here. And then you get the effect shot. Then you get more of his face, and then like Max kind of reacting while he's trying to get the gas. Mm-hmm. But this, I mean, the scene isn't impactful because of the effect. It's because of his like. The way he sells it. And there he's just kind of post-orgasmic.
And what's his name? Is it Brian May who does the score for this film?
Right, but not Brian May from Queen, the Australian Brian May.
The Australian Brian, of course. Mm-hmm. We all know this.
But we all know that Vernon Wells, of course, Bennett in Commando.
Yes.
Yeah. See, like, that's the Vernon Wells, he's like a... he's like a type that they had in the 80s. These guys that are, like, mm-hmm. make these crazy faces like that and sell stuff like that that you don't really see too much anymore.
Also,
he's also in Weird Science.
Fun, yeah, playing this character. the same character. Him and the other, the guy from what, Hills Have Eyes? The actor from
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those two. Watching the... Yeah, Vernon Wells. That villain... We'll get to Humongous later, but it's neat that there's the villain that we just saw who drove off in a fit of rage because, you know, of things that will... Okay, that's a lot of noise. I'm hearing all that.
Dead body.
Somebody's crunching something.
That villain, he's more like the Darth Vader because we get Humongous, who's more like the Emperor. Like, we get two villains in this movie that really kind of give Max something to fight against as he reluctantly teams up with other people.
The music box is such a recurring theme, not only in this movie, but in, I mean, it's even showing up in Fury Road in the trailer I saw.
Mm-hmm. No, the Humongous is like the big bad, and then like the Vernon Wells is kind of the more personal.
Yeah, that's why he's more the Darth Vader.
He's
more closely connected to Max. By the way, Mel Gibson is, and these are the good old days of Mel Gibson. I'm happy to talk about Mel Gibson here in this kind of early 2000s era when Mel Gibson turned a corner. All of that beforehand, I'm all about Mel Gibson and what he's doing. In this movie, he has, less than 20 lines of dialogue, about tied with Arnold in the first Terminator as far as what he says, but it's completely effective, and everything he does in this movie is awesome.
He's a guy who doesn't talk unless he has to.
It's neat how he mixes both like John Wayne and Clint Eastwood in kind of the way he plays a character, where he's like both in The Searchers to an extent, John Wayne mixed with the Man with No Name. And
yeah, it's written very Man with No Name-ish
for sure. But I do see elements of John Wayne in there too, just the way he kind of his swagger, just the way he kind of presents himself in some instances, even though he's not talking nearly as much as John Wayne does.
But he's able to express quite a bit. Without the lines, absolutely.
Which is something Miller is very capable. Miller's a great visual director. In terms of how he shoots his action, how he frames just his movies in general, they're very... And I read this about how he wanted to construct Fury Road, and just even in reflection on his Mad Max series, where he doesn't like a lot of dialogue because he'd rather have the world be able to see his movies without having to understand what people are saying, and so by communicating all of everything mostly visually, he can accomplish that. And it's very impressive. You can watch most of The Road Warrior and really not worry about what people are saying. You can kind of piece it all together.
I gotta shout this out real quick. Bruce Spence here is the gyro captain. Mm-hmm. My sous chef at Gypsy Cafe for about 5 years was a dead ringer for him, only he had much better teeth, obviously. but he went for Halloween in the picture-perfect gyro captain outfit.
It turns out he was Bruce Spence's twin brother, Rob Spence.
His name's Rob. His name is Rob, but not Spence.
His name was Rob? Nailed it.
It was, yeah. It was. But not Spence.
Robbie Spence.
Oh, yeah. Robbie Meixner. He was my sous chef for 5 years at Gypsy. He was a dead ringer for the gyro cabinet.
Very cool.
Is that why you brought him in? Or
when I interviewed him, I looked at him, and we talked for a long time. I'm like, you ever see The Road Warrior? He said, yeah. He said, yeah, and I was like, you know, you look just like the gyro captain. He was like, really? And we went and watched it together a few months later after we got to know each other. And he agreed, he's tall, lanky like that, kind of long-faced.
So you're like, if we play Mad Max, I got to be Max, okay? You have to be the gyro captain all the time.
Well, yeah, good guy, and good reminder of this movie every day I went to work.
Something I enjoy about the about Max in these movies is that it's not that he's like the toughest guy or like the biggest guy or the strongest. It's just he has the most determination to just get the hell out of the way.
He's got a nothing to lose attitude.
Very much so.
It's It's crazy. And he's our, I guess we, you know, he's our hero. I guess we follow this guy.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, he's not particularly nice. Like, he's just kind of living.
And they never have a, like, a moment where he has, like, a heart of gold. He's in it for him start to finish in this movie.
In this movie, yeah. Like, because Mad Max is, yeah. What makes Mad Max, we should talk about the other movies too, but what makes Mad Max so, for what it's doing, unique in a sense, is that it's about a man who loses his humanity. And it does not end well for Max. It's not like when he gets revenge, it's not as if everything goes back to normal. He's still really mad. He's still Mad Max. He's the Punisher, essentially. There's plenty of draws between this and the Punisher. Jim, would you agree on that one?
I would. The one line that always sticks to me from the first Mad Max is, "I'm the toe cutter. Think of me when you look to the night sky." You know, and I can't wait to see that same actor as Immortan Joe in the new one.
Yes, the same actor plays a different antagonist in the new Mad Max, and it's like, yes, this is so neat. Just like Bruce Spence pops up as two different gyro drivers in Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome.
Right, but
yes,
the guy who played the toe cutter very much seemed like a cult leader to me, mm-hmm. whereas Humongous seems more like a commander, like a field commander.
For sure. Right. And we'll get to Humongous.
Yeah. I think Toe Cutter is one of the biggest strengths of the first film when you go back to it. It's a really strong villain.
But so I was saying with Max in like the first film, he is a good person in the first film. He's doing his job, he's a police officer, he has a wife and a child, and he's, you know, trying to be a good family man, but the motorcycle gangs do not like Max and things do not work out well for him, and he essentially loses all that makes him a good person. And so this movie, there's not a huge arc for Max beyond begrudgingly accepting the fact that he needs help from other people. So he doesn't really gain, he maybe minorly gains back some humanity, but he's still pretty mad at the end of part two. Then you get to the third one, it's like, well, then he has more of a chance, I guess, because he has time with the children to spend, and it's a lighter touch. But Max is he's pretty consistent in attitude after, you know, horrific deaths in his life.
Yeah. Well, the third Beyond Thunderdome does take place like 15 years after this one.
Yeah,
so he's a much older guy.
Jason Voorhees is in this movie?
No,
this is pre-Jason Voorhees.
Pre-Jason Voorhees.
Well, pre-Jason
Voorhees is in this movie?
That is Lord Humongous, and you will address him as such.
Oh, that's right. He's the true Ayatollah of rock and roll.
Exactly.
And then one thing I like about this movie that sticks is it's got a good enough sense of weird too, because we got that kid character coming up who's just odd and creepy. And
all of these movies do. I mean,
yes,
Thunderdome easily does.
Thunderdome easily ups the weird factor.
And wait till you see this next one. I mean, there's a shot in a trailer involving a person holding a guitar, and I think if you know what I'm referencing, you know what I'm referencing already. But when you see it, you'll look at that and be like, that just is an emblem of how weird and unique these Mad Max movies are.
I think one thing that really shows off for me too in rewatching this again is the whole how Miller shows doesn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean? Like, instead of piling a giant info dump of exposition, well, here are the people with the refinery that they blah blah blah. We do. We're with Max. We're surveilling them. We're watching and we're seeing rather than hearing. You know what is happening? And it's really, I don't know, it's an effective way to tell the story.
Yeah, there's very little fat on the bones of the Road Warrior. It's very straightforward in what it's doing. Mm-hmm. No time for reversing.
Oh, I love the scene with the dog food.
Oh, yeah.
Where do we get a pair of those pants, by the way, that the gyro captain wears?
Pretty sure that they're over at Urban Outfitters.
Thank you.
Actually, yeah, I think Rob found his first costume at Goodwill. They were like exercise sweats or something.
It was an Australian Goodwill, and they were actually Bruce Spence's pants.
Bruce Spence, who wound up being in Star Wars.
Yes. Sith, he's in Revenge of the Sith. In, what's that planet? The one where Grievous hides out at.
Yeah.
It's going to bug me a bit. Because he's like an elaborate costume, too. Like, it's this like whole gear head setup, and he's got these teeth. It's really cool looking. Like,
it's really cool. It's,
I wish there was more of him in that movie.
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool looking
Utapau
alien creature.
Is the name of that planet. Utapau.
Utapau.
It was a cool name. It was like Utapau. No, Bruce Spence, he's been in a lot. He's in Dark City. He's in pretty much any Australian movie that's you know kind of weird. He's probably in it, but he's a strong character actor.
And he was in the Matrix Revolutions.
Yeah.
Very, very geek-friendly character actor.
I haven't noticed him at, like, Comic-Con and things, but I'm sure he probably goes to conventions. Or probably used to, maybe. I don't know if he does now anymore.
You know, it's funny that this movie is, you know, I'm sure there's a few people who argue a different one over it, but, I mean, this one is, like, hands down everyone's favorite of the series, or considered like the best. Yet of like home video releases, like they always, all the stuff goes to the first one. They put out special editions. Warner never really put out a big rambunctious edition of The Road Warrior. There's a commentary, and then Leonard Maltin introduces the movie.
Is there, you think it's a rights thing maybe, or
I don't know. I mean, Warner Brothers, I don't know if, I'm sure Warner Brothers put it out when it came out originally. I think they did. But do they just not? I don't know what the case is. But you'd think there'd have been something in the last, like, 20 years for it significant. But
it just must mean it's coming.
Yeah.
But no, I completely agree. I it is curious as to why there's not a larger.
And now, why not now?
I mean, they just put out, Scream Factory just put out the Mad Max special edition.
That one's owned by, that one's a Fox, MGM Fox movie. They sublet out. Warner Brothers does not sublet their movies out to other studios for some reason.
But it is interesting, yeah, that Mad Max has gotten a lot of treatment, and Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome have not really gotten too much in the way of big action.
I mean, there's music videos to put on Thunderdome, but They put out that box set a couple of years ago with a nice tin, but it was all basically the stuff that's been released before, or just now together.
Which I have. I was happy to have that.
It's a cool little case. Got some cool artwork in it.
Well, with that in mind, what do you guys think of the first Mad Max?
I like it a lot. I saw it first. So, because like when I went to catch up, you know, I didn't see any of these in the theater. I went to the video store to look up Mad Max, so I'd start with Mad Max. So I started with Mad Max, and I really liked that movie, and I was like, man, that was good. And then I watched The Road Warrior next, and it blew me away. But the first one it's got a very cool, some of that 70s pre-Star Wars kind of sci-fi vibe still going for it, which I dig. And there's some really impressive stunt work in it still for how low budget it is.
Very much so, I agree. I mean, it has, you can see even, you know, as a, is it Miller's first film? Probably, right? His first
major, it's got to be a
major release
around there. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, but he certainly. I mean, people look at The Road Warrior, and it, you know, it's a technically impressive film. But Mad Max, I mean, it has all the same kind of things.
Yeah,
just from, you know, a smaller standpoint,
more, a bit more raw.
It's a bit more raw, and it's not, you know, the finale is not it's not an epic chase. It's more personal because it's Max directly dealing with people that, you know, harmed him in some way. Where like it's the only movie that's really focused on Max. Like this movie, it's like Max is the lead character, but he really is more of a guy that just winds up in another situation involving other people, which is somewhat the same in Thunderdome and very much the same in Fury Road. But that movie, you know, it's about this guy, and he gets into these car chases occasionally. They're not too many, but the ones that are presented are really like well done. I mean. And it
definitely has some of that DNA of the 70s revenge film too, like Walking Tall or Coffee or something like that, you know, kind of crossbred with what Brandon's talking about, that kind of pre-Star Wars sci-fi future.
What they refer to is what, like Aussie's Ozploitation, since it's Australian, that was like the kind of the term they applied to it.
I think they were saying on the new Blu-ray that like, while there were stunts and stunt people, they tried to encourage a lot of the actors and stuff to do their own stunts, which is kind of crazy on set.
I think it's just so much more impressive about this movie even now is that if they tried to do it now, I realize that Fury Road has gone mostly practical, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Yep.
if it were to be done today in, you know, in a normal sense, would definitely be done with CGI or, you know, digitally somehow. But I mean, just the realness and the grittiness of the footage of the stunts in this. I haven't seen Fury Road yet, but it really makes a difference to me. I mean,
yeah, no, it's why it holds up.
By the way, this score is pretty good.
Yeah. It's an enjoyable, like, it feels of its time, that's for sure, but it's enjoyable.
But it also helps, in regards to what Jim was talking about earlier with the facial expressions, it just helps to really highlight those even more.
I agree. That's something I was kind of, when I was watching the first one the other day, that's something I was kind of cluing into. I was so in the score for this new one. I'm sorry that I keep referencing the new one, but it's just, it's like I'm trying not to say anything about it while saying things about it. But like, the score for this new one very much reflects what these movies try to do as well, which is, you know, yeah, very much try to tell the story with as little words as possible. So yeah, having a strong score very much aids in that. And you get this, which is, yeah, like you said, it very much kind of reflects the mood of this. It's Mickey Mousing to a point, where it's very clear what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, what's great too is that this whole series has been allowed to be one man's game.
Hi. How you doing? What's up?
Hello, mate.
Have one of these.
Love seeing the little details on Max when you get the shots of him doing, like, you have the leg brace. You have his kind of his shoulder sleeve look and everything. Mm-hmm. The glove in his hand where he was shot in the first film.
Well, it's kind of like remnants of his police uniform.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, stitched together.
It takes dedication, I think, to wear that much black leather in the Australian sun. What a great place Australia is, by the way, to show a post-apocalyptic wasteland. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but the setting certainly, you don't need much convincing to think that this is the future.
Well, in these environments, these places that they have look like people could actually, you know, put them together, which is pretty cool.
For sure, yeah, it's all real.
Yeah.
Emil Minty, well, yes, the feral kid.
It's our narrator.
Mm-hmm. Spoilers.
Spoiler for a 30-year-old.
You can now stop the podcast here.
Yeah. Go back and watch it first for this obscure podcast commentary for The Road Warrior.
This 34-year-old film.
That kid was really rocking that mullet. That's for sure. I do, like... This movie, it's not quite like Yojimbo, but like the movies, and I mean, we'd have mentioned The Man with No Name, so obviously, but I mean, it is neat to see Max kind of negotiate his way between these tribes, even though he's only really dealing with these people. He doesn't really want to deal with Humongous and his gang. Although it makes you wonder, what would it take for Max to, like, join up with someone like Humongous? I guess, you know, not killing one of his men would be a good start, but, like,
right.
See, he's obviously, you know, he's a road warrior, he's alone. Wolf, essentially, in these films.
I think, you know, his goal here is to just get in there, get his stuff, and get out before Humongous takes over. I mean, he doesn't
particularly care.
Doesn't care, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This group has a gaggle of uniforms that I enjoy, including hockey pads chick, and what's his face? Not Mick Jagger. Blonde Mick Jagger.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Guy hanging from a dolly crane.
I like Baby Spice right here.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some Jawas lurking in the background somewhere. There's a lot of stuff going on in this scene.
Like, what, you know, it's like, what, how many sports stores were raided? When
exactly, all these tech bows.
Mm-hmm.
Bows, pads.
He is blonde Mick Jagger, by the way. Like, he's totally
he is, yes.
It looks like he's not getting any satisfaction.
He's like blonde Mick Jagger that went to boxing instead of becoming a pop star.
What do you think the security measure is around the rest of this base that doesn't have the school bus in front of it as the wall? It seems like there's a lot of focus on trying to get to that front door, but I don't know. How much protection do they have in the backside of this thing?
Yeah.
Humongous is all about going through the front door, I guess. It's more of a pride
thing. He wants to be seen.
It's a pride thing. I get it. I understand.
Humongous doesn't skulk.
Yeah. I like you can see Mel Gibson's they kind of paint his hair a bit so you can see that he's getting older, which is always it always throws me off a bit. It's like, all right, they're trying to make a point about Max, but I understand that it's further in the future. It's a neat
it could be a stress hair color change too.
Very true, yeah. And it's even more present in Thunder.
Charlie Sheen. I'm just kidding, that's not Charlie Sheen.
He's too fat. This is 81, Abe. This is when he was like skinny heroin Charlie Sheen. Just think of Ferris Bueller, which is 6 years after this.
This is 70.
This is 81.
81, okay. I thought it was.
Mad Max is 79.
79, okay.
And Thunderdome is what, 87?
85.
85? 85. Hey, that's right. Yeah, geez, what am I thinking? Was it after Gallipoli? It was after Lethal Weapon.
This? Oh, yeah.
No, no.
Yeah, this was after Gallipoli.
It was after Gallipoli. Gallipoli's like 80. Gallipoli's like the year of this came out or something.
I think Gallipoli's 80.
Maybe.
Yeah, it was like right before this.
That's a great movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Weir.
Because Mel Gibson worked with Peter Weir a couple times.
Yeah.
That was like his.
That other one that I can't think of right now.
Year of Living Dangerously?
Sure.
Wasn't that a Peter Weir movie, too? With him and Linda Hunt?
Yes. Yeah.
And the Mad Max films, I think, you know, Mel Gibson still, after all three, wasn't like a mega superstar. He was on his way. But like Lethal Weapon would
rocket
capitalize it into that. Yeah.
Right. Although this movie was a pretty big hit.
I
see now what you mean by the whole entire, like, what if they flanked them?
Yeah, exactly.
From like the west or the east.
From the sides.
Yeah, exactly. Velociraptor style.
You know, I love the groups, like, with Humongous. Some of them look like each other, then some of them look like they were going to set the standard for the style, and then they just wound up being the only person that dressed like that. It's kind of fun.
Now, Gallipoli's 81, yeah. So it's like,
oh, it was 81? Okay.
Big year for Mel Gibson.
Gosh, these feel like two different stages for him. Like, mm-hmm. You can see that, like, you know, he's got star power and charisma in both, but, I mean, Gallipoli feels like a guy, like, your first glance at him, and Mad Max feels like he's fully formed. Or Road Warrior feels like he's fully formed with it.
Yeah, they're definitely different performances.
So you had The Bounty, which isn't, like, a huge movie.
Mrs. Soulful,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember other early
movies. Then, I mean, Thunderdome was big for its time, too. I mean, it had Tina Turner. Like, it was a thing.
I mean,
it was a big summer movie.
If Road Warrior is the one that inspired and, like...
Hold on. Lord Humongous just entered the scene, guys.
There we go.
Yeah.
We never get to see behind that mask.
Does he... You think it's him talking, or they re-record it? Like, they have a different actor
talking
doing.
On set? Oh, I'm sure it's a different actor.
Do you think it's a different actor?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of... Especially, we'll get to one scene where it's like... You see a lot of pantomiming, it looks like, where it really doesn't look like he's talking, but it looks like he's giving a very physical performance, despite not being the one saying the things that are coming out of whatever he calls a mouth behind that mask.
Yeah.
Look at that head. This is a time where I ask the question, have you guys seen Bellflower?
Of what?
Bellflower. Have you guys seen the film?
No,
Bellflower?
I didn't get to that one.
No.
No, really? Oh, my God. Well, Bellflower is this awesome indie movie that came out a few years back. And it's about these two guys that are... Among the things that they do, they build this car that's called the Medusa, which actually exists. And it's heavily inspired by The Road Warrior because it's their favorite movie and they worship Lord Humongous. And... The movie is a trip. It's, I believe it's streaming on Netflix, and it's certainly worth watching. I love it. But
bam!
It's described as a post-apocalyptic romantic drama. But it's set in present time.
A little kid took out my man chick.
That kid just boomeranged the hell out of that guy.
Was that a chick? Yep. Are we going with
no,
that?
No, it's a guy.
No, it's a dude.
That's a dude.
Yeah, it's a dude.
That's his man chick.
That's a man chick. Thank you. I missed the herd. Fingers.
Oh.
That's not good at all.
Fingers.
Backflip.
I love how they all laugh at him.
He was so cool.
Yep.
I do like, yeah, I do like that. They're not really concerned about the fact that he just lost his fingers. They're just like, that was a fun thing.
One of their guys got it in the head and the other just lost fingers and they're just having a good old laugh. You're having a laugh.
I do like for having like a main villain like this, it's like this like hard as edge, tough as nails guy. He has like assless chaps and like he's really mad that his main friend just died.
Who's going to keep him warm on the motorcycle in the back?
And let's all be honest.
Yeah, when you wear what'd you say?
Let's all be honest.
Come on, Wes. Hug it out. Hug it out, Wes. Come
if Rufio grew up, this is what he turned into.
Yes, yes. Yep. He grew up to be in a better movie.
That head. That has to be an effect, right? What they're doing on the back of his head? Because he's making his veins pop on his weird bald skull.
Yeah, that's probably some sort of bald cap.
It has to be. Yeah, looking at this now, it's like, why? Yeah. No one's doing that. No one's jutting veins out of their bald head.
Maybe he just worked out so much that it happened.
So after Thunderdome, you get Lethal Weapon. Then you get Tequila Sunrise, Lethal Weapon 2, Bird on a Wire, Air America, Hamlet, Lethal Weapon 3, Forever Young. Mel Gibson's doing it all.
Hamlet.
For some reason, either the male had a face. Then he gets back to real movies, and he goes to Maverick. And then Braveheart. There's like a good run of stuff. Ransom. Give me back my son! Conspiracy theory.
Machete kills.
Get the gringo.
Just walk away, leave the gas.
Look at me, you just don't want to mess with this.
It's just such a, like, the scope's not even, like, it's not like the camera's shot that wide, but you just get a feel for this whole universe just from these shots of, like, these little sets and all these cars and motorcycles and weird-looking folks.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, like, the Italians had all this kind of similar, like, they got it, but they didn't know how to, like, most of them didn't know how to shoot it well or something, because this isn't, if you're ripping it off, this is like a dream to rip off for something big, because you're just using junky stuff. No, I was saying before, I was like, if the Road Warrior is the one that like inspired people and like the filmmakers love or whatever that, you know, was influential, then like Thunderdome's the pop culture.
For sure, yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Because that's the one that gets quoted. You've got music coming out of it. I mean, it's just the word Thunderdome gets used out of context and incorrectly.
It makes me wonder like how many other movies have that kind of pop culture impact where you have one that's like the one that gets the acclaim for being the best, but the other film gets like more of the kind of the quotes and the love for whatever reason that extends beyond what the actual movie is.
I have a perfect example of that. Aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of quotes from Aliens, but I mean, you only think of a couple from the original.
But I mean, I think Aliens and Alien are closer in quality than Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome, and The Road Warrior.
Well, that's true.
I mean, yeah, if you pull
Aliens
people,
was like a much bigger blockbuster, and it had all the, I mean, you know, it's a bug hunt, man, a bug hunt, and all that.
The game
stuff.
Over. Yeah, I certainly understand where you're coming from. It seems very obvious that The Road Warriors are a better movie than Beyond Thunderdome, where people, right, you know, can still be up in arms about which Alien movie is better. I personally prefer Alien. I'm sure you do. I think you do too. In that,
yeah,
scenario.
I do.
Yep, yep. I think it's, for me, I don't think it's as, you know, close Alien and Aliens as people like to make it out to be. But Aliens is still a
but
great time.
You know that argument.
Yeah,
though.
I know there are people who make out. Yeah, it's just almost a 50-50 split.
Yeah, many, not but as Thunderdome, many people would go to bat for Thunderdome over the Road Warrior.
I think more people would put the first one over Thunderdome after the Road Warrior than they would trying to put, yeah, so there's more distance that way.
I honestly think Thunderdome's pretty spectacular.
I think it's fun. No, it's a fun movie.
It's got some great parts.
Somebody's always got to finish last when you're doing a series ranking. It doesn't mean you're worst, but that you know, what's the worst Mad Max? We can't go just like, what's the least best or the least favorite? We always have to use drastic exaggerations to describe things, but I think there's a lot of good there with Beyond Thunderdome. I think it drags once he leaves Bartertown for a bit and meets up with the kids, but it picks up and finishes out pretty strong.
That's the only problem, is that Beyond Thunderdome is, for whatever reason, almost 2 hours. And that's like hour 46 minutes, but at the same time, it feels longer, where Mad Max and Road Warrior feel pretty streamlined. Right. Even with Mad Max, where, yes, there's not nearly as much kind of, even this movie doesn't have like a, it's known for its action, but there's not a ton of action. Road Warrior, it's just so straightforward in what it's doing, so it feels like a pretty big action movie. Wait till you guys see Fury Road. By the way, it's just so it doesn't stop, like, it's ridiculous.
That's awesome.
But Thunderdome, there's a lot of stuff that everything involving the Thunderdome, involving Bartertown, is
It should never leave Bartertown. That's the problem.
Yeah,
it's the most interesting thing. Yeah, and it leaves there for too long. And, you know, when I went to watch the movie recently, I was, like, trying to make time. I was like, how long? I was like, man, this is, like, 2 hours or something, right? And I looked, and I was like, oh, wait, it's this short? I'm like, wait, I always thought it was really longer. And then I started watching, I'm like, oh, yeah. And I felt like we were getting close to, like, an end, but we weren't. But it's like, yeah, that's okay. It's because it drags at a certain point.
It's too much of that in the middle, but the end is great. Like,
it's
Miller doing a giant car chase finale, which
he's obviously
proven he's very good at doing. So.
And I feel like if, like, Thunderdome feels like almost like Mad Max as done by, like, Amblin Entertainment. Because the scope of it, the way it kind of, like, feels and it's shot kind of reminds me of, like, if, like, Amblin took on a Mad Max movie to make a general audience's Mad Max movie that would be close to what you get.
Mm.
That's a neat way to look at it. Yeah, especially because it's, you know, Thunderdome is PG-13, while the first two Mad Max films are R, however much you want to qualify that these days in R ratings. I think it's a little different probably, but
right.
Well, they had boobies in them, so
true. Yeah, and you know,
boobies rape. And some rape.
Yeah, so I guess get there R. You go. But It certainly has the lighter touch because of the kind of the Lost Boys element, even though this film has Rufio. But
Rufio.
But like I remember because when I first saw Mad Max, I don't know when I saw these movies originally, but when I revisited them for the first time in a while during college. I watched Mad Max. I'm like, yeah, that's still fun. And then Road Warrior is like, yeah, this is still amazing. I've seen Road Warrior a lot. That's the one I remember the most before college in terms of like what I thought of this former trilogy. And Road Warrior is just always amazing to watch. But then I watched Thunderdome again. I was like, I like this a lot more than I pictured in my mind. And I think there's just so much creativity there. Yeah. And I looked. I was like checking out like what people were thinking about Road Warrior or Thunderdome, and like it. You kind of get this sense that it's a movie that gets reviled, but it really wasn't. It's not like, I don't know, Spider-Man 3 or something.
Critics
where
liked
it
when it came out.
It was, or like Crystal Skull, which critics also liked. It was well-liked, and Roger Ebert had it on his top 10 films of the year list. He liked
it
the most.
Four out of four.
Four stars. Like in his review, he even questions himself. I was like, this isn't possible. Movies aren't supposed to get better. Like he like says something like that along those lines in the review. But he was so enamored by the kind of the world that Miller creates in Thunderdome, which is very, it works. Like it's the most before, I mean, the time and technology makes things better, but it's the most cinematic of these first three just by nature of, you know, what he's able to accomplish with improved cameras and visual effects technology and what have you. But
I like how his world building is slow and natural and not overbearing.
Yeah, for sure. It's not, like Jim said, it's not, you know, trying to lay you out with exposition and really try to clarify things with people talking. It's just more of like, nope, here's the world. He's walking through it. Here we go. Let's do this.
And it's plausible, too.
Yes, it is.
Right,
As outlandish and crazy and goofy and, you know, cargo cult as it gets, it's all kind of plausible in its own milieu, you know?
Which is not the case in Fury Road, by the way. You'll wonder, like, wait, how would they establish things like this? Whereas this movie's just like, yeah, these people just gathered some hockey pads and started pretending to be really strong. Like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I really do love the way he just, like, kind of makes the landscape almost one of the characters in this. It just really is the way he frames the shots and...
It kind of reminds you, like, this shot up here of him carrying it and the little town back there is like, it looks like, you know, reminds you of like if you're like driving down a hill to like a big city or something. It's got that kind of feel looking at it in the shot.
And it embraces color. Like, it's not a film that like is dreary and like ugly to watch. Like, it's not, you know, the most appeasing of visuals to see some of the stuff in this movie, but it's not a movie that tries to hide the fact that there's bright blue skies and people have colorful outfits and what have you. It's a movie that embraces the kind of comic booky nature of the world. Now we get more gyro, Captain. Like, look at his little purple scarf and all the like, and his pink blue shoes and everything. Like, it's a movie that's
he's a colorful guy.
It's a movie full of colorful characters.
Somebody's been rummaging through the rubbish bin.
Yeah, this is one of these movies where, like, you know, every time a new format comes out, it's usually one of the first ones I pick up.
Yeah, this and what, Evil Dead?
Yeah, Evil Dead's one of them.
And
yeah.
T2.
T2.
And The Princess Bride. Right?
Yes.
Those are the four. The movies that have the most releases ever.
Yeah.
Spaceball's getting up there, too. The space was like tons of Spaceball's releases.
There's another T2 release coming, too.
What?
Yeah, they're releasing again. I think with a digital copy.
Before Sega Genesis?
Yes, before Sega Genesis.
I know the first Terminator just came out like last week again with the digital copy and like the red case.
Yeah, even though it's
the exact same movie.
Yeah, they're debating. They don't know whether they remastered the second one or not, but I doubt it.
Fortunately, it looks great already. But
yeah, it looks fine already. There's a lot of people with problems with it, but I'm like, it looks fine.
Remember the Extreme Edition DVD?
Yes.
Because it had this awkward metal slipcover that ruins the entire case. That's why I remember it.
That's right.
Which was the one that actually came with the Terminator skull?
That's the Extreme Edition. Like a 3D skull or like on the case?
Like, it's an actual like little tchotchke Terminator skull. I think Johnny M. got it when it came out on Blu-ray.
I think that was like the collector set with all four of them.
Mm.
Or like three of them? Have they done one that's like all four? Like,
they have one that's all four.
Really?
But I think like the Blu-rays actually sit in the head of the Terminator skull.
What we all need.
Pull them out of the skull to watch them.
I'm sure there must have been a giant uptick of gyrocopter flying after this movie came out, right?
Yeah. This movie and You Only Live Twice are my favorite gyrocopter movies of all time.
Nice. Rumble in the Bronx is my favorite hovercraft movie of all time.
It's the only and the best hovercraft movie of all time.
And obviously Chain Reaction is my favorite fan boat movie of all time.
Not me, man. It has to be Gator.
Gator?
Yeah, Gator.
That's a fan boat movie, son.
That's a list I should make over at RandHollywood.com.
Best fan boat movies?
Best fan boat movies. Best all-terrain vehicle movies.
Police Academy's got one. Like, I think the Miami one.
So I don't care, is that what you're saying?
No, you shouldn't, but it has it. In case you're needing that 10th entry. Or
reaching for that back.
And your comment just be,
we do 15, it has so one. Yeah, I might need that one.
Gutenberg and Fanboats, what's not to love? Oh, wait, it's Police Academy.
This was the most expensive Australian film produced up to that time.
What topped it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Probably Thunderdome, if anything.
Until Did they shoot Thunderdome in Australia?
Probably not, now that I think about that. Probably Baz Luhrmann's Australia. Let's go with that.
There we go.
that's probably the most expensive Australian movie of all time, if I had to take a wild guess.
Crocodile Dundee.
Crocodile Dundee.
Muriel's Wedding.
Goes to Los Angeles, because I'm sure they shot all that in Australia.
I'd have to say Muriel's Wedding.
Muriel's Wedding, yeah.
Or Young Einstein, starring Yahoo Serious. That was an Australian production.
You don't get a lot of Max driving his own car in these movies.
No. When he sees him.
He didn't really have...
The lighting on his face, too, is just great.
Oh, on his face.
Yeah, as he watches Max drive by with a trunk.
But, like, yeah, I mean, besides the first Mad Max, where it's, you know, his police cruiser, essentially, like, he doesn't really drive his own car, which is obviously, you know, motivates much of the plot. He needs gas for his car.
Yeah. Making semi-trucks and a Chase cool.
That's hurting.
Ouch.
That's not good for that person.
Yeah, that first one's actually got some cool gore stuff in it, too, with, like, that hand that gets ripped off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's cool because of the way the characters address it. Like, Toe Cutter, make sure that they're aware of the things that happen to people. I love that we have a gyrocopter to give us excuse of, like, having these wide shots of the trucks and things that are around.
Yeah.
Like, you could easily just have God's Eye camera for no reason, but because there's a gyrocopter, it's like, no, this makes sense. This is good.
Do we get, like, good coverage like this in the new one, Aaron?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yes? Okay.
With gyrocopters?
There's no reason for an excuse. But, yeah, rest assured, there's nothing to worry about when it comes to establishing the visual scope of Fury Road.
Okay.
I mean, you've seen the fire tornado from the trailer.
Like, right.
They make sure to emphasize what that is versus the size of the tiny cars that are driving at it.
Awesome.
I like
Here's my gun. Gun. Here's mine. Oh, wow.
I like Humongous treats this like Jack Nicholson treats his gun in the first Batman.
Yeah.
He's always a good shot with it.
Hey, we're busy.
Every time I see these like nudity shots in Road Warrior, I feel like Dino De Laurentiis came on the set one day. It's like, hey guys, let's spice this up a bit.
What are you guys all doing with clothes on? I like you with the assless chaps.
Are you producing this movie, Dino? Nope, I'm working on King Kong right now, but don't go right at me.
Oh, I think King Kong was like 77.
Yeah, it's like 77. Okay. I'm working on this Manhunter thing right now, but don't mind me.
Gonna be big. Gonna be real big.
Yep, not gonna sell
just
those
not
rights.
With this one. You want Silence of the Lambs? You can have it. Good luck.
A snake. That'll stop this man. Ha ha!
Stop him, too.
Good stuff. I mean, these stunts are cool. I mean, it.
Yeah.
I know. And the way they're shot is just beautiful. Look at that. Ugh.
It's like seeing, and we'll get to the, you know, the big chase in the movie, but I don't know if, like, people that see this now that haven't seen it before, there's a variety of pinks involved in this car right here.
Yeah,
between
yeah.
his facial hair and the car.
Oh, Lord.
But the. I don't know what people think that, like, see this for the first time now and look at these stunts, but these aren't easy things to accomplish of people, you know, jumping onto cars that are speeding down dirt highways.
Yeah, like, you know how many times they probably had to film that to catch it right and then, like, make sure they had enough of it to use that they had to crash those cars, take them back, set them up again.
Yeah.
Which really helps that you have a movie set in a world like this so you can beat up the car and just use the same one again.
Yeah, that and, like, don't worry about tracks on the road and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People love doing flips in these movies. I like when he headbutts up, there's, like, a flash of white, too, to emphasize the kind of the power.
He's out!
I also like, because we were talking about these costumes and the assless chaps and things, all of the, they're fairly practical given the heat of Australia. So seeing Lord Humongous wearing nothing but like a Speedo with like random like cloth around him, it's like, yeah, it's because he's hot. Like it's 100 degrees outside always. I like this scene a lot because it's like Max is like racing to get back somewhere, and it's not just he gets in time and they all stay out. Two cars get in and they just have to like, there's this like giant work to not open a gate. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a unique take. It's a unique action sequence. And it's like, because the stakes are like, they're personal stakes that are high and like people could die, but it's not like world threatening or whatnot, but it's neat how like, how intricately designed this kind of action is. Where it doesn't have to be the end of the world, it just has to be a simple thing like, I don't want this thing to move or else bad things happen to people.
Boomerang's out of view.
Yep.
Oh, no, it's the gyro
captain.
Gyro captain!
Is he going to flip off this thing? I forget. Oh, no, he does a... He does a reverse pole vault, never mind. Then quickly growls before leaving the frame. Which is how we should all leave rooms, by the way. We should all just like turn back and go, and then run away. I like to think that if Max is the man with no name, then the gyro captain's like Bruce Campbell is Ash. He'd be the one to be saying things like, "Were you born in a barn?" Probably were born in a barn. Primates just muttering all the time. These people touching his stuff.
Hello.
I see you're wearing a headband. I like headbands.
I see you're female. And it's after the apocalypse.
This is the first Australian film mixed in Dolby soundtrack.
Ooh.
I like this guy that repeats things. Seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders.
Mm.
And he has a nice glove. Abe, where are you on all this? You loving yourself?
Am I loving myself?
Yeah. You enjoying?
At McDonald's?
You having fun?
I am having fun. I'm just sitting back, relaxing, watching, and listening to you guys.
Yes, the great tradition of the engineer who overestimates how long it will take so that when they come back with it, you have 12 hours, you can actually get it done. Like Scotty from Star Trek, you know. It'll take about 6 hours. You have 4, you know, and this take about 24 hours. You have 12.
The costume department assembled the costumes by raiding, amongst others, junk shops, secondhand clothing stores, sporting outlets, and S&M shops.
No way.
He's wearing football pads.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, football pads that you get at your local S&M shop.
Yeah.
Was there, Jim, maybe, did you see Thunderdome theatrically?
Yes.
Was there a general regard for Thunderdome from like an audience level when it came out?
I think Thunderdome, because it was like a PG movie, like went out to a wider audience.
Yeah.
Than Road Warrior did. I don't know what the actual box office numbers were, but it seemed like it was more of a mainstream accepted movie than the Road Warrior. Like the Road Warrior, I guess because it was rated R or whatever, it seemed, I don't know, perceived more like of a cutting edge type of thing. And then by the time Thunderdome came out, it just seemed like more of a like a PG-ized version of that. But I mean, I remember it being like a big movie that year.
I guess I mean more in terms of like. And obviously it's different because we have like the internet now and just the way movies are seen. This is the scene I was talking about with Humongous kind of pantomiming
along.
But something like Indiana Jones, for example, where you have this kind of build up of like, you saw those three movies and they're amazing, and now you have this fourth one, and then like, here's what the reaction was by the general population. Obviously the Road Warrior and Mad Max are not nearly as popular as the Indiana Jones films or other giant films that have a follow-up coming out, but I'm just curious if there was kind of this like fan reaction that reflected something.
I think the fan reaction was it was good, but not as good as the other two.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, like, you know, it was... It's a fun, it has a lot. I think it's the weakest of the three, but it has like a lot of good set pieces and moments in it. But I think that was kind of the general, you know, consensus. Plus, I mean, Road Warrior, when it came out, was very still like a cult type movie. I mean, it was very popular, but then it ended up on the midnight movie circuit for a long time in the '80s. It was that kind of thing. Whereas Thunderdome was very much a mainstream, tentpole release. So, I mean, among the, you know, the geek community, such as it was at that point, you know, a.k.a. like the letters column of Starlog magazine or whatnot, it was generally regarded as like the, you know, the, maybe not the Disneyification, but like the mainstreaming of this kind of story. But, generally regarded, the weakest of the three.
This is what I
would agree, too. I mean, like you said, you know, Brendan said earlier that, you know, Beyond Thunderdome had music videos, you know, I mean, it had Tina Turner and it had Angry Anderson, it had like, you know, actors and people we had heard of, you know, so.
This is something I want to revisit when we do what I assume it will be our eventual epic Star Wars commentaries for all three films. There's a teaser for the end of this year, I'd imagine.
Star Wars, The Clone Wars, and Star Wars Holiday Special coming soon.
Yeah, and both Ewok Adventures.
And don't forget the Droids cartoon.
And the Droids. Another series that did the same thing was the RoboCops. They had two R-rated films and went PG-13 for their third one, trying to bring in more. And they even announced at the end of RoboCop 2 in the credits, is like, RoboCop will be back with family-friendly adventure or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah, there's an announcement within the credits of RoboCop 2 saying that the next one's going to be more kid-friendly.
Because they acknowledged how, like, horrific RoboCop 2 is in terms of the content.
We're like, we kids
killed some
dealing,
kids and...
kids dealt drugs. Next time.
Well, it's like a shift, too. I mean, from bigger-budget R-rated movies to bigger-budget PG-rated movies. I mean, In the 80s, you get a lot more of these R-rated movies that end up making a lot of money. But I guess, you know, by the third sequel, they realize that, you know, they have to kick it down to PG to make, you know, the bigger box office.
Evil Dead kind of stands as that to an extent. Even though Army of Darkness is R, it's a different vibe because it's medieval.
Yeah, definitely a different movie.
Yeah.
Well, PG-13 also in 1985 was brand new. That was, I think, the first year they used it.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And so Thunderdome. I don't know. I would assume Thunderdome was shooting for a PG-13. I don't. Just the way the film goes and the
for sure. I mean,
content
and even the way the kind of the violence happens in that movie. It's very similar to this movie. It's just because this movie. I mean, taking away some of the nudity and the, you know, the rape aside, like it's a soft R as far as the violent content goes. You see, some fingers get chopped off and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean,
there were a lot intense content got a lot more attention going towards R back than they did now.
Yeah,
because I mean,
you can see them editing Road Warrior slightly differently, and it could easily be a PG-13. I guess
right, because like Winter Soldier could have been an R back in the early 80s.
Yeah, I would say.
That's true.
Because like, I see that movie, I'm like, man, this is really pushing PG-13. Like the Wolverine, I mean, he's going around with claws, stabbing guys. And then we had a movie called The Conjuring come out like 2 weeks before that was just like a ghost movie with no gore, nothing like incredibly, you know, mortifying. And that got an R.
Every Bourne movie could be R.
Every Bourne movie. Could
I'm
be
sure
R.
You guys have seen this movie is not yet rated, right? The documentary about the MPAA. So. It is kind of arbitrary, and there are kind of doesn't seem to be like a, you know, set standards, that kind of thing.
As far as what's happening on screen, I really like as much as I'm making fun of Blonde Mick Jagger, he's a good leader. I like what he tries to do. Like, he's not unreasonable. He gets where Max is coming from, but just the way he approaches negotiating with this guy who he knows could help his crew out tremendously, it works well.
It kind of makes me think of like an Aeon Flux character, like Aeon Flux the cartoon.
Yeah.
Kind of like a live-action Aeon Flux character.
Not the film starring Fury Road, Charlize Theron.
Right. It all comes back.
Exactly.
But, yeah, kind of reminds me of that that kind of vibe.
The dog used in the film, named simply Dog, was obtained from a local dog pound and trained to perform in the film. Because the sound of the engines upset him, and in one incident caused him to relieve himself in the car, he was fitted with special earplugs. After filming was complete, he was adopted by one of the camera operators. Fun facts about the Road Warrior.
Who changed his name to Doggy.
And there was a tribute to that dog in Fallout 3 named Dog Meat. Dog looked exactly the same, even with the bandana and everything. So.
Aaron, since you've seen Fury Road, how, in comparison to, Tom Hardy, Mel Gibson, are they? Is it the feel of the same character, or does Tom Hardy kind of just do his own thing with it?
It's. Max doesn't do a lot of talking to really get you into the mindset of what if he's going for a Mel Gibson or not.
Right.
I eventually picked up that he's probably doing an Australian accent to a point, but it's all in the swagger and the way he presents himself, which I guess it's akin to what Max is, but it does feel like he's not trying to channel Mel Gibson. I can say that. It feels like he's trying to channel what the Mad Max character represents.
Okay.
There's other things, but I don't want to go into too much just because I think it's interesting how that film connects to, because it is a sequel to Beyond Thunderdome, and I find it interesting the way it connects to the previous films. That said, it stands completely on its own. Like, you could watch any of these movies and not be lost.
it's interesting that they got, we got that film, because I know brand awareness is everything, but we have the guy who made the first three films making the fourth and making it a sequel. And, you think a studio just like, we're just going to remake the Mad Max.
Didn't it take him like 15 years to, to bring it to fruition? I kept reading that, he had a script and then he ended up doing Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2 and everything else. And he kept having to put it on the back burner. I mean, he wrote the script so long ago that he actually wanted Mel Gibson to be in it.
Yeah, I remember
before
when
Mel
that was
Gibson
happening.
Flaked out,
Yeah, before things happened with Mel Gibson that make you not want to see him in another Mad Max movie.
Right.
I'm sure he would have been interested. I'm sure he would have wanted to do it in the 90s, but Mel Gibson probably didn't want to do it.
He was in Hollywood.
I'm sure Mel Gibson, got to a point where he just, Lethal Weapon was his well, and he,
Dick Donner grabbed him up and did all those things.
Yeah, but I'm sure now Mel Gibson would be glad to do one. But it's just,
in another world where people accepted Mel Gibson, he probably would have been the villain in this Mad Max movie.
Maybe.
Or Max.
Or like a Shaft situation where Richard Roundtree and Samuel L. Jackson both play Shaft in the same movie.
There you go. It's Nephew Shaft.
Yeah. Little Max. This car is so cool still.
Yeah, I love how when he puts the overdrive on, they always zoom in on it,
Yeah, we only get to see so much of it, but it's like, it's always cool. Was it the Interceptor? The V8 Interceptor?
Yep, police Interceptor.
Wasn't that one of the titles for the film, the first film in foreign countries?
I believe so, yeah.
That first film has some cool posters.
Yeah, it does. Thunderdome's awesome poster.
Thunderdome's got a great poster, too. The first one, I was so happy. Scream Factory, for its reverse side of the cover, has that that original poster. I'm like, oh, yes.
Part of why I love Scream Factory stuff. They always have that original poster. And they have the slipcover, so you can have the best of both worlds.
Yep. All those companies that do that, I think so much. It's become a thing now. I don't know if Scream Factory started, but, there's, Arrow Video does it. Synapse Films does it. They all provide the original art instead of Photoshop craziness. But Scream Factory, in their defense, has some awesome artists doing alternate artwork.
Oh, for sure. I really love that Escape from New York cover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that the Mad Max one's good. I think, isn't that the same? They look very similar, at least.
Yeah.
He's gonna have a tough time doing this without fingers.
Yeah.
Trying to say something earlier that I forgot about, but it had to do with your question about Tom Hardy. If I think of it, I'll think of it. It's sad there. You can take out the dog. Lord Humongous doesn't play around. His men do all his dirty work. Mm-hmm. When he's not doing it himself, because he's Lord Humongous.
Hey, I love that moment he tries to point the shotgun and just...
Hey, what's going on back here?
Oh, crikey!
Uh-oh. My ferret. My ferret hat. No.
Yeah, another thing with these, you know, older the older movies, the practical stunts and effects, they really blow stuff up.
Yep.
Like, it's, yeah, there's no enhanced explosions by way of computers. It's... big
time. There's a really cool shot coming up with involving the gyrocopter that I'm looking forward to seeing again because I like seeing that shot. But this is again an example of Max is not like a, he's not a superhero. Like he's just a guy.
Yeah.
And he's often wounded.
And he often has shotgun shells that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the first film, they shoot him and then he gets his arm run over, which is a cool shot.
His blur effect is nice too. Slight blur. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Yeah.
this is cool, this has been cool knocked out. Yeah, this has been used time and time again.
It's a great overlay of everything happening. And then we get Gyro Captain.
Hey, how you doing, man?
You're going to make it.
We'll get you some Vegemite. You'll be fine.
Well, the bus is still there.
Definitely. Apparently the narration that begins this movie was not used in the Australian version. Which is, now I wonder how that works then, because you have the kind of, it leads into that, if you have that, just that, like, that zoom in shot on Mac and it just cuts right to the movie. I guess, right?
Maybe.
Wonder how they kind of, I mean, this movie was shot in sequence, apparently, but I wonder how those kind of bookends kind of form themselves. Because it is a cool way to kind of... It turns, even though Max is not, you know, a superhero, it turns him into kind of this mythical character, given the way that the feral kid is, you know, narrates him in the opening and close of this movie.
That's the way, he's kind of portrayed that way in all three films, is like this mythical character when we hear about it and stuff, but we just see that he's just some normal guy.
Yeah.
You know, in the films, but the way they talk about him in narrations and such, like he's a big time mythical character in the next one by the end of it,
for sure. Yeah, definitely.
There's even some of that in his reputation with the police department in the first one, then you know, we just,
well, even the way they introduce him in that first one, you don't see his face for a long time. They just set him up in kind of bit shots and what have you before you finally get the reveal of Max.
Right, and he's a quiet cool while his partner's like the badass loudmouth.
Yes. wonder if it's like fun to be on these sets doing this movie.
Depends what the weather's like, I guess, and what your costume is.
I mean, constantly hot. It's not too much of a. Yeah, what your I wonder what that extra roll call was. It's like which
man,
character
am I playing? I wanted the assless chaps thing.
Everyone's racing
nope,
every
nope,
day to get
you have
the
to
right
wear
costume.
You have to wear the fur-lined vest. Oh, damn it! You have to wear the macrame robes. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to take a nap on my break in this bus. Oh, it's sweltering hot and muggy in there. It's gotta be cool though to be on set with the Davis. I mean, just sitting back and watching stunts and explosions and stuff. That's gotta be some fun
for someone like Gibson, maybe, or something. That some of the guys might be. Like...
Well, no, and not being not the crew that's trying to get him to work. But I mean, if you're an actor on the set, I'm sure that's some cool stuff to watch.
Well, because you know it's moving, so it's like what actors like sitting around watching something to see what's happening. Because if you're like in the car and just kind of like looking around. Like in a passenger seat or something.
I wonder how many of the people they hired to act are just like stunt guys that are like, you know what, you're not going to talk. You're just going to be in a cool costume that will overtake any shortcoming.
There's probably like 5 actors in this movie besides Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And Bruce Spence.
Yeah.
Don't forget Vernon Wells.
Oh, yes.
But he's doing stuff.
Oh, he's doing a lot.
I love the kind of the... Again, I really like just Lord Humongous and his gang and just like what they're doing, but like the two bodies that are just tied to the front and just this kind of assemblage of vehicles and what have you. It establishes this sense of iconography involving the gangs and the good versus evil and how close they are yet how different.
Right.
Load that gun up. Get ready for a show.
It's a very fancy gun.
I wonder what it must be like to sit down and be like, all right, time to write a car chase.
Do you just put car chase and let the second unit figure it out?
Yeah, but that's not Miller's style.
No.
he's the guy that does it. Like, he's the guy on the back of the motorcycle holding the camera to make sure it gets all the filming right. Which is insane. This Fury Road, I'm telling you, like this 70-year-old George Miller making this movie, shooting 418 hours of footage. But something like
and,
this.
And the thing that amazes me too, it's not only the stunts, but the way he shoots the stunts too. You know, it's I mean, you had that very 70s, like, Hal Needham, Vanishing Point kind of style for car chases, and this is totally not that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's his own style. He certainly has, like, his influences, I'd imagine, from older days of cinema and more... I don't even know what, like Buster Keaton.
We get a lot of bumper eye view and I mean the kineticism of the car chases is just so much more than what we were used to seeing in movies before. You know,
and he is. Well, I mean, this movie's at that time. I mean, it's obviously there are movies before this that kind of provide new ways to present action or what have you. But Miller, in his own way, I mean, he's a forebearer of this kind of style. Like, he's doing things that you haven't seen before, and it's not necessarily because it was inspired by something directly, although he obviously he had to learn how to make a film at some point, but like he does have his hand in revolutionizing things. I mean, James Cameron uses this as an influence for him for things like Terminator and what he was doing,
right?
Explosions,
talk about real explosions, Brandon.
Yeah.
It's
look at those tires.
5, 7 of them.
Mm-hmm.
We only get to do this once, guys.
I want as many shots of this as we can get. How many cameras?
Don't hit the trigger early.
Who's getting the gyrocopter shot? Yeah, and I just love how it weaves down through the road here.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome. Great. Yeah. This is great. All these hockey masks. And these vehicles. You get the trucks and stuff, but then you see some of these weirder ones. And there's no, like, can't be easy without when you're not wearing masks and stuff and driving at the lengths you're going.
Off the chain.
Let him go. But I mean, planning a chase like this is insane. Like, and like even just like writing a script down, where it's like there's no dialogue like in here.
I mean, yeah, you got to see it in your head and perfectly describe what you're seeing in your head, and get explain to others. I mean, this is detailed, and
I don't think they did animatics or anything like that, though, did.
He storyboards, but I don't know how much storyboarding he did at this time.
Go. Yes, we are going.
But because I've seen a lot of, you know, all of us have seen a lot of behind the scenes stuff on Blu-rays, DVDs, or what have you. And, you know, you get some that kind of, some people use, you know, toys to kind of like map out chases and action sequences like this. Some have very, you know, previs, obviously, for the computer age, and some have storyboard sequences. Some just write it all down or very descriptive, or yeah, like Jim, you said, like let second unit handle it sometimes. But a film like this is so, it's so carefully organized, like it's Miller's style. It's so to its point. It's so you just, when you see certain shots, it's on a very, very specific reason, which is what any film should do. But again, there's no fat on this thing. So like it really, every time you're seeing a new shot of something, it's because it's important. And it reflects very well on this film that you always know where people are, what's going on, what the space is, what the geography is, which is a lot of the best action movies, especially. Right. And these movies in particular, it really works. Also, I love that this guy's on fire for like 10 minutes. By the way, like, does not put this thing out.
He's all like, "I'm okay."
Yeah. Like Jordy LaForge. Yeah, it's a shocker that she gets it.
Yeah.
Oh man, like, well, it's crazy because she doesn't. Well, she's one of the main people in the town. She doesn't feel like super important, but she is. It's
this guy's still on fire. Crazy. Still on fire. It's kind of going out. But yeah, no, she's one of the few like people you continually check in with as far as that town goes. Or, you know,
the camera catches her a lot more than she speaks or anything, but and you just, it's just crazy how little there is with her, but her death is impactful.
Well, she just has that. She's very striking and recognizable. You know, so you latch onto her immediately.
She has that crimped hair and those hockey pads.
Yeah, you kind of feel like she should make it through the end because she's definitely there for her cause. And...
In the Hollywood version, she's Max's love interest, of course.
That's true.
Who begrudgingly accepts him eventually.
I can forget my wife.
I don't know. Mad Max sounds like Jason. She's gone, by the way. Like just rolling under the wheels.
No, they both get run over. It's insane.
Both go under the wheels.
It's not. There's no glorious burial for either of those two characters.
It's ruthless here. I mean,
that's a great shot.
Love
right
this
there.
Shot.
That's
perfect.
It's neat because that shot's so simple. It's just like then Max pops out and shoots something, but just it's because of the way the film earns those shots where it doesn't try to doesn't do it often.
This shot here too.
Those are just the people falling off stuff.
These stunts incredible.
Again, these car like this isn't easy to do. Like this car chase stuff. And it's not like these are, you know, it's not the Transport. He's not driving a fancy BMW. This is like a beat up rig, like these motorcycles and some dune buggies.
All backup's gone except for the Feral Kid.
Probably should have went after those wheels earlier. Or Humongous doesn't care. Whoops.
Love the way that was shot, too, like from underneath the truck and then back out again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The more I watch this movie, the more like the camera work just blows me away, even more than the stunts. Again, you made a really good point, Aaron. It'd be really easy with all these moving parts and all these different things going on to be very confused and chaotic and not know where everybody is in relation to whoever else, but that's never a problem here.
And this is the same year as one of my all-time favorite... I mean, this is one of my all-time favorite car chases, but one of my other all-time favorite car chases of Raiders of the Lost Ark, same year, where that's another movie where it relies... It's not that it's the most complicated in terms of, like, all the stuff going on the scene, although it is, in a way, but it just feels so real. Like, it just... Everything about it just... Which is why that's my favorite Indiana Jones film. That truck chase is phenomenal. Because you have just a guy in a truck, and he's dealing with just hordes of people climbing all over it, and they're sliding around in the dirt, and the camera never confuses you as to what's going on. This is a movie, again, same year, where there's, like, Jesus, like, 18 different vehicles all around each other at the same time, and you have to follow all that, and it does it tremendously.
Doesn't even react.
I love that, like, ammunition is such a commodity, so it's like you can't shortcut it with guns too often. So when they do it, it's like, you know, it has, like we were saying with that one shot, like it has the impact that it needs because you can't rely on guns to save you all the time.
Right. It also explains why so many of them have, like, you know, like he has that mace, Morningstar, the bow, the crossbows, and things like that.
Yep.
Because the ammunition's so scarce. Take a bite out of crime.
How long has this driving sequence been going on now?
2 hours.
Yes. This one's probably been at least like 10 minutes.
It's been
right?
like 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie, once Max joins up with the people, I mean, it's a nonstop. It takes little breaks, but I mean, there's, you know, one chase and then quickly followed up with another.
Oh, Mick Jagger.
Oh.
Oh man, he just pulled
a futuristic
trident.
I think I killed a dude with a trident. You might want to lay low for a while.
Like, look at all these shots. Like this low camera shot of all these things.
Yeah, I know. This is like a rat's eye view or whatever, a mole's eye view.
Utter chaos.
That's great.
There you go, Gyro Captain. Oh no! What's good is that gyrocopters are very easy to not die in, apparently.
I guess.
Given all the safety precautions around him. There was a seatbelt, I think. And that's it.
He would reincarnate himself in a...
Yeah. And so this is like an entire action sequence where Max is taking on, like, you know, hordes of people. And he's sitting behind the wheel of a giant big rig for, like, the majority of the time. He's not racing a fancy car. He's not getting into fancy fisticuffs. It's just him sitting behind the wheel of an 18-wheeler.
I hope he's got a, the right class license to drive that.
I believe that's a Class A.
Class A.
And he's injured. He can barely do anything. He's his kid to help him out. Is this like the best jump scare in the thing?
Pretty much.
It's a good one. Didn't really think about it, I guess, because, again, good management of everything going on. You're not like thinking, oh, I wonder what else could happen in this. Humongous needs a shower. That's the biggest of his problems right now.
I have the heartbeat there.
That is a good job. It just works. That's not going to be good. Boom.
I love you, Lord Humongous.
Boom.
It's a hell of a way to end your car chase.
Yeah, well.
I like the Thunderdome does it similar, too, in terms of, like, Max just drives into something intensely, like, that kind of finale. With this emphasis right here, where it's not even... Max wasn't the key to this. He was the key of distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Thunderdome. He needs those kids to get away. He's just more of like, well, I'm involved. I guess I'll help out. And these guys are like, oh, well, Humongous is gone. There's just sand.
They're all bummed.
Another day. Mondays.
Who's going to be the captain of our softball team now?
Humongous was originally supposed to be Max's partner, Jim Goose. They decided against this, but left a few hints, such as the horrible burns behind Humongous's goalie mask, his Raiders' use of police vehicles, and his own use of a similar weapon, the MFP standard sidearm.
Wow, I never thought of that, but I guess it could, yeah.
Oh.
Would have been a neat twist.
Goose is a big mug. Yeah, he's a big, bulky guy like that, too.
Eats the dirt, right? It's good dirt.
Don't waste good dirt.
Yeah.
Let's go get a beer. You son of a...
Yes, exactly what I was thinking.
You got me.
From like the 80s.
You got me.
Yeah. In 1,000 years, I might get to like you.
Like, here's a movie where Max just, our hero is just left with nothing. Like, he's like, whatever. I guess I'm done. I'm not joining a crew.
I suppose you have an extra seat on your bus. Nope, no room. Oh, I was come like, on. Really, I drove your truck for it. Yeah, well, I'm sorry, but we don't have any room. We have all this gas. Come on. I'll just hang out in the back. No, that's okay.
I also like that the chain of command apparently meant that Mick Jagger died, so the newest guy in the group, gyrocopter pilot, needs to be the leader.
Can the victor go to spoils?
I'll be fine here. Just leave me here. It's fine.
Is the intro shot just the reverse of this? Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
It's come full circle.
Okay, yeah.
Well, that's good stuff. That's just, I can just watch that.
The Gyro Captain.
The Humongous.
Jell Nielsen.
Curmudgeon was played by Sid Highland.
Another fun thing is watching the names in Fury Road, because you certainly don't learn them in the movie, but the credits, they went all out on naming these characters, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
Like Sir Claude Mohawk.
Midge Consultancy. But yeah, I mean, it stands up just as well as it did back in the day.
It really does.
It's just easy to watch. I can just put this on and be like, yeah, all right, let's do this. Road Warriors.
I just watched it on Saturday, and I'm watching it again now, and it's just as entertaining, moves just as fast. It's so awesome.
Yeah, and like what you said earlier, it's not even as though you have to really know what happened in the first one to know what goes on in this one.
We've been watching it like this, where I'm talking to you guys, and I can't hear it. I know exactly what's going on, not necessarily because I've seen it already, but because it's just told so simply.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cliche, you know, to say, you know, show, don't tell in a movie, but, I mean, that's really the most effective way in this kind of thing.
Yeah, good stuff, guys. Enjoy watching the movie here.
That was good.
I always want to do a Thunderdome commentary just because that's such an interesting movie to talk about, too, with the Master Blaster stuff and Tina Turner.
I'd be down.
Well, we'll find out next time. Same mad time, same Max channel. But I think that's going to do it for this commentary episode for Out Now, Fair and Abe. With that in mind, Jim Dietz, where can people find more of your work online?
You can check out DC TV Podcast and the Walking Dead TV Podcast at hhwlod.com. And you can check out the Nothing's On Podcast, where we talk about TV and movies every single week. All the news at the Taylor Network of Podcasts.com. Plus, my Retropolis blog appears there as well.
Brandon Peters.
I write for WhySoBlue.com, and I have my own blog, Naptown Nerd, which is naptownnerd.blogspot.com. I'm currently writing about Mad Max stuff, so if you want more, if I didn't annoy you enough now and you want more from me, you can check out both of those sites. Have links and stuff to my Mad Max pieces. And I'm on Twitter at BT Peters.
Yeah, I'll be sure to add those to the show notes, the retrospectives that you're doing, because they're always fun to read. You can find more of my work at thecodazeek.com. That's my personal blog, as well as at Rant Hollywood, where I write about movies daily. And I'm also on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more of Aaron's work over at ranthollywood.com or thecodazeek.com. And if you want to find stuff on Google, just go to google.com.
Thanks for that, Abe. You can follow all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over at audioboom.com, the podcast network site that hosts
that has
all of our other episodes. You can also find all of our past episodes. SoundCloud, hhwlod.com, where there are many shows that Jim is also a part of there. iTunes, of course, you can find our show there. You can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on The Road Warrior, Mad Max in general, or what have you. And our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, Twitter, outnow_podcast, and all, you know where our show is at this point.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah, but thank you guys, for you, Jim and Brandon, for joining me and Abe to discuss the Road Warrior. And for the listeners that have been, you know, listening patiently to hear all of our thoughts on The Road Warrior.
Well, thanks for having me. I love doing these commentary tracks. Any excuse to watch some of these great movies, for sure.
Always a pleasure.
For sure. I look forward to hearing your guys' reactions to Fury Road. I know Abe and I will be discussing that on the next official episode of the podcast. And I have some guests.
Tomorrow night, I can't wait.
I have some guests in mind, which should be a lot of fun. But I think that's going to do it, Abe. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.